You are super excited to be here. All right. Hello.
Hello.
It's episode 37 of the Chattering Classes. And we've already come up with the title. Emily has job.
Woohoo.
So now, Emily, I can't remember what episode you were on. In the teens, maybe.
It was like 2 years ago. So
2 years ago.
How many have you made in 2 years?
Not many. Certainly not long. Maybe 12 in 2 years. Okay. I'm prolific. But when we last spoke, you had just finished your course, or maybe your university was shafting you to do one more semester.
No, I just finished uni, I think.
And you were looking forward to having a job, and now you have.
And now I have so much job. I just don't know what to do with it.
You have so much job?
I have a lot of job. Yes.
Is it stressful job? Are we going to talk like this and just annoy the shit out of everyone? Is it stressful? Is it too, when you say too much job, do you mean it?
I don't think it's too much job. I just think it's a lot. Teaching's a lot of work, I think.
Yes, so you are a teacher, yes, we should.
I am, yeah. People know.
It's a lot of work.
Yes.
Okay, what's the biggest surprise in terms of work? Apart from like just how much there is.
But I think just all of the extra stuff, like the not so much the like administrative stuff, because I know people always complain about, you know, having to do photocopying stuff. That doesn't bother me. It's just all the additional stuff, you know. I spend 3 lunchtimes every fortnight doing AST prep.
Yeah.
And then go to debating every Thursday night, which is until about 10 usually. Wow. Yeah. And then it's, just all the additional stuff, which I really like, but then it's a lot of stuff.
You find that new teachers tend to get a lot of stuff come your way?
No, I had to ask.
Oh, really?
It. Yeah.
That's unusual. Usually what happens is someone's like keen and then they're like, cool, let's just give you all the stuff.
I don't know if it was so much that or if it was just like Ellie, another young teacher that I work with, she was kind of keen to take on the AST stuff again because she'd done it before, but she didn't do it last year.
Now, the AST is the
ACT standardizing test.
Wow.
Yeah.
So part of the acronym is an acronym.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So HSC in everywhere else? No, not everywhere else.
Similar. It's like the end of year
12, isn't it?
12 exam type thing that all ACT students do the same test on the same day under the same conditions to standardize all their marks and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they do some sort of wizardry with the...
Yes, the scaling.
The scaling, model, which is still quite beyond me.
But... Yeah, that's one of the things. I've just started at a college too. It's just marks go in, marks come out.
Yeah, and they're different.
I get the process. I don't know how they work it out. But sure, if a computer does that for me, good job.
But the kids are all over it. Like, I have new Year 11 students asking what their Z score is.
The Z score.
They are across it.
How far away am I?
Yeah.
How many standard deviations am I? I very quickly was like, oh, I'm going to have to retrawl my mind for what all of this means from 20 years ago.
Well, I went to college in the ACT and I don't remember ever asking for that. Like, I don't even think I knew what that was. You just got your score and, you know, it was...
Yeah, I never thought about it.
And then they printed them out and you could see kind of where you were.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, but one of my biggest regrets of my life is I chose the wrong subjects at high school, that year 11 and 12. In New South Wales, we went to 7 to 12 schools. But I remember choosing subjects that were going to get scaled favourably up.
Yeah.
And so I did like chemistry and physics and like whatever, 3-unit maths. And in the end, I look back and I'm like, why didn't I do like history and subjects
I
would have enjoyed?
I did a semester of human biology and then didn't really enjoy that very much. Yeah. And then I did no maths,
yeah,
which was wonderful.
Yeah.
Double English, sociology,
yeah,
psychology, modern history.
See, I did the equivalent.
Legal studies, all of the humanities courses and not much else, really.
See, I would have
I think
done
I overloaded, though. I think I did
six subjects. It sounds like
subjects.
A lot,
yeah.
I did the equivalent. I didn't. It's not quite the same, but I didn't do what would be considered the tertiary English even. Oh. Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, we had three levels of it and I was in the middle level. When I think back, I'm like, why didn't I? It's because I didn't think I was good at English until the end of year 12.
But anyway. Yeah, and everybody always kind of says to you, you know, you need to do maths and stuff because they scale well.
Yeah.
And they said that to me and they said, you know, you shouldn't give up maths because it scales really well. And I was like, I will be literally at the bottom of that list.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to be at the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
I also don't, yeah. It's like, this is not fun for me, so.
No.
And that's been all right so far, I think, without the maths.
No, it's not much that you missed out on in year, especially year 11 and 12 maths.
Yeah.
But then what about, what's been the good things about your job? What's been the surprisingly good thing? That's it.
I think that, so last year was my first, like the end of my first full year.
Yeah.
With the same classes, with my own classes, and just how, like, it was so emotional at the end of the year.
I was gonna ask you that, yeah.
With year 12s, but just how many really, you know, beautiful young adults kind of, they all ended up being really decent humans. And
yeah,
that was, I think, really rewarding. And that was really like a surprising thing that I was so emotional as well.
Yeah. Was that for all your classes or mainly just the year 12s that were leaving or?
Just the year 12s that were leaving because the year 11s obviously.
Yeah, sticking
around.
I
figured I'd see them again
yeah.
the next year. But the year 12s, it was really nice because they all sort of wanted to add me on Facebook and
yeah.
let me know what they're doing and stuff as well. So I think that that's really cool.
I mean, I think that's a good thing about that social media has done, especially for teachers like us who like to keep up with what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's nice to still be in contact. I'm still in contact with like students I taught who finished, you know, they're mid-20s now. And
yeah.
it's nice just every now and then to drop them a line or they drop to say, hey, I've just done this, or hey, I'm just going to Japan, or I'm going here for 12 months. And you just, that's always very nice to see they're doing that.
And but, then they sort of send you, you know, I got into ANU and I got into what I wanted to do. And they're just really, you know, you can kind of share in that, that excitement with them because you know that they worked really hard for that, so I think that's really
and even
rewarding.
The ones who didn't work really hard at school but then find what they want to do, find their voice or find their what type of job or, and it can be completely different to what they thought they wanted, certainly different to what their parents thought they wanted. That's always nice too. And then you have some who are just like just meandering around. That's all right. And did you find, like, it was the emotion a little too much?
I think it's probably, I don't know, and I think you've said similar stuff to me, you know, when you have a really good cohort of students and you're like, the next years are not going to be as good as you. And so you kind of feel like, oh, it's not going to get better than this, you know. These kids are amazing and... So I feel like I felt a bit like that.
That takes about a term, I reckon, to get over.
Yeah.
You have to just – I remember the year that after my really great year 10 year level left, I remember having – it was a conscious choice to say I have to treat this the next year group. Like, they are my year group now.
Yes.
I can't
yeah.
keep thinking about...
Yeah, you can't compare them. You can't have a favourite child.
It's not fair to them. Exactly,
yeah.
You can't have a favourite child.
Yeah.
Even though that was clear to everyone. But, yeah, I always... I have found the last couple of years, in particular, the last probably 3 years, that it's... I don't know. Is it I'm getting older and weirder?
Well,
that,
yes.
But... thank you. That I find it the end of year to be... I'm not present at home for that week when they all leave. They have the big ceremonies and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I find that I'm sort of drifting around at home, still too emotional. And it's the same thing. And then you starting in a new school is probably better because you don't come back and see, oh, God.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, you're really proud of them too. Especially for the students that you know kind of had some sort of adversity and, or, you know, like just really struggled and maybe school wasn't the right, time or the right place for them, but they gave it their best go and they still graduated even if they didn't, you know, aren't going to go to uni and they still kind of made it through. I think that's really special to be able to go, oh, okay, like, you know.
Yeah,
and I know you can do something.
Yeah, and you can make it, you can actually make a difference.
Mm.
Sounds cliche to say. Yeah. But there's a lot of kids too who education's for them but school's not for them.
Mm.
So they drop out or they get moved around schools.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then they
the right time.
They drop out and they go to CIT or they go and they're surrounded by adults and no one's care, no social life involved. It's just get their work done. And there's several stories where I've had of kids who have left in like year 9 and 10 and then have done their year 11 and 12 in 1 year, and when their cohort's in year 12, they're at university already. Like there's that where they just go, oh, I just found this easier and once I got away from the pressure. And that's the hard thing too, and so many students step away from school and just be like, oh, my God, that school was bullshit.
Mm.
Or as soon as you leave and you just think, why did I care about hanging out with all of the – what did I care about the opinions of all of these people who I'm never, hopefully, going to have to interact with ever again?
Yeah, and I think that's why I get frustrated when people – and you and I have had this conversation before that when people talk about kind of – saying like, oh, we shouldn't, you know, make adjustments for students or we shouldn't do this for students because we've got to, you know, that's not what the real world will do.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to try and protect them from that for as long as we possibly can because the real world, is a bit of a scary place, but that's not, our job is not to make school, you know, some sort of like the Hunger Games or something.
No, true, but the real world does make concessions for you. That's what annoys me is when people are like, oh, in the real world. No, in the real world, I mean, in the workforce, in the real world, if you're good at your job, people give you more work to do. If you're bad at your job, people give you less work to do.
Correct.
That seems to be what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Now, we're going to just go through movies and such here and there, but we'll go all over the place.
Okay.
And you said to me earlier that you like the movies with the explosions where everyone dies.
Yes.
That's like in the same movie. It's not separate movies. So like action explosions.
Yeah, I really like action movies. I don't watch a lot of movies.
Okay.
If I ever kind of sit down to watch TV, I always pick a TV show over movies, which is stupid because I feel like then I'll end up watching a whole season of a TV show and that's like 3 hours worth of TV when I just say I can't sit through a movie. But I feel like I have a really short attention span for movies. I don't like to go to the movies.
Yeah.
I get bored.
You don't like to go to the movies?
Not really. And I don't like it because then if you go and then what if someone's talking?
Like in the movies.
Yeah, like other people watching the movie and I get, you know, irrationally angry and want to throw my popcorn at them. And
that is not irrationally angry.
Get myself thrown out of Hoyts and banned forever.
That's
like my worst fear is, are we going to go to a movie with a noisy audience?
Well, that's why, you know, Justine's movie choices are, you know, the
standard, indie ones.
Yeah, Nordic black and white movies about date rape and things like that. And so the reason why it's a joy going to those movies isn't the movies, but the people who go to those movies aren't talking.
Mm.
They're there to watch a movie.
Mm.
So I that's what I notice is very rarely do I go and see a big blockbuster action movie.
And that's probably, I bring this on myself as well, because I like those movies that probably teenage boys also like.
Yeah.
And so there's always a lot of teenage boys in the audience.
Yeah, but having said that, and I'm sure Stu is listening,
mm.
that we used to go to the movies and hate other teenage boys doing that rubbish. We used to mock, people would get their laser pens out in the middle and point it, so then we would sit in front of them, or if they were sitting behind us, we would just mock them loudly, like, "You are so funny." And then we would be just as bad as them, but I guess, for everyone else. Oh, I don't know. I can't remember. But it used to just annoy the shit out of me.
See, that's just my worst nightmare.
And I do remember seeing One Thrill Warriors, which is a real full-on...
I know what that is.
Okay, yes. So I went to see that.
It's a Kiwi film, right?
Yeah. And I think The Mask was showing at the same time, and there were all these teenagers going into The Mask, and me and Richard and... I don't know if someone else went to see, let's go. Yeah. We want to see this. And that was the thing. There were like three old ladies in the cinema with us. And this is much preferable. I can't. Yeah. So maybe you need to go and.
I don't like movies like Justine.
No, you don't. You have to find a happy medium, I guess. Ones that, that people don't want to see. Or just take a day off work.
I also actively avoid anything sad.
Oh,
and I know that's Justine's favourite genre of film. Devastation.
Needs to be a rating that she could follow. It's just,
Yeah, so I haven't seen Titanic.
Okay.
I haven't seen The Notebook. I haven't seen Atonement. I haven't seen, any of those very popular, very famous ones that I know are going to be sad.
Out of those three movies, Atonement was the only one I could barely stand.
Really?
Titanic is terribly written,
but you know it's like a classic.
I
went to my friend Amelinda's house once, and we were going to watch it, and then I think I just was like, well, when does the boat sink? And she was like, oh, not for another three hours or something. I was like, nah.
I remember
I'm going to bed.
I remember clearly. This is how naive I was I didn't want to see it, and a friend of mine was like, no, you have to watch it. And I said, I will only watch it if it wins Best Picture Oscar. Because they never give Best Picture Oscar to a film that's not good. Like, that was my reasoning. And then it won. I was like, all right.
Ugh.
And then I watched it, and 20 minutes into it, I was like, this won Best Picture
Joke's
Oscar?
Jokes on you, Matt Berry.
Oh, God. Mm. The characters are so terrible.
But yeah, so I like the ones with the explosions, because they typically don't have very kind of three-dimensional characters that you connect with, and then when they die you don't feel any really great sadness.
Their friend has to die and then they survive.
And it's always quite predictable, but I prefer that. And I like the ones where the good guys win, quote unquote.
That's most of them, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, the one you put down here, the first one, and when you turned up today, it seemed like that's all we were going to talk about.
That's all you asked me to talk about, and I didn't think that was a whole podcast.
Which is Con Air.
Yeah.
How great is Con Air?
It's so great. It's the greatest.
It is a weird, it's not very different, but there's something odd or just a little twisted about it.
Yes.
The character, the people they got to act in it, I think. Getting people like Steve Buscemi and John Malkovich and John Cusack is in a blockbuster movie. Like, that's very rare. And Nicolas Cage is in it. I don't know if he'd done many of these types of movies before.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Nicolas Cage as a person.
No, he's a weird dude.
I do follow a Facebook page that's called Nicolas Cage's Face on Things.
Yes.
So that's about the extent of my knowledge of Nicolas Cage.
He acts a lot.
What do you mean?
He acts big. Like, he doesn't have...
Like, he's always the same sort of...
Yeah. Although on Davian's podcast, the last one I did, we talked about him in Fear and Loathing. Leaving Las Vegas, where he's... So there are some moments of him being over the top, but on the whole, he's quite reserved and... being alcoholic and sad and moody.
Yeah, it's just the accent that gets me in Con Air, though. I can't quite get on board with that accent.
Oh, it's the hair as well. Like, there's a whole thing about it. It's Nicolas Cage in a singlet.
But there's like a lot... I have a lot of questions. You know, it's an excellent movie if you just want to watch it.
Yeah.
Because it's, there's a plane, and then the plane crashes, and there's guns, and there's bad guys,
and then
there's
really
car
bad guys.
Chases, and then... it's got everything.
Yeah.
But also, like, he's sitting in a prison cell making origami in the beginning. I have so many
questions. Yeah, like, that's the difference of it.
Why did they put,
like,
all of these people on the plane?
And why is Nicolas Cage on the plane?
Why was a diabetic on, like, what?
We put all these horrible people on a plane, and you, Nicolas Cage, you can go on the plane because you have to get home.
There was no other plane available.
No other way. You've got to travel with all the horrible criminals on one plane. And slightly shabby guards watching them.
Not very alert guards.
Not very alert.
With the guy in the cage, John Malkovich in a cage. What's that guy's name? That big Mexican guy. Danny Trejo,
yeah.
He's scary.
Yeah.
He's always scary,
in real life. I think he's done some scary things in real
life.
Yeah.
He's just always the big, you know, big Latino man in every movie.
Yeah. They stick to their range, don't they? Yeah, it's odd. It's an odd movie, and there's lots of explosions, and there's planes crashing, and there's people with guns, and the good guys win in the end.
Yeah.
And all Nicolas Cage wanted to do was go home.
And they really just, you know, technically, like, should he have been in jail for that long? Look, there's a lot of questions. Does the legal system really operate like that?
I don't know. You're seeing it as a commentary on the American prison system?
Yeah, well, maybe. You know, like, whose idea was it to put all of them in the plane at the same time?
Yeah, it was not forward-thinking.
With not very much security.
Like I said, there seemed to be chubby security men in charge of them.
Yeah.
Who'd like to have a snooze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what happens in those movies. If you go to sleep, you're probably the first one to
die. If you're having a nap, if you're a security guard and you're having a nap, or you're eating a donut, or you're drinking a coffee, or you're complaining about your wife. That's...
Correct.
Yeah, or a sore knee or something like that. Or 2 days to retirement.
I read something that said that they were going to make Con Air 2, but it was going to be in space.
Okay.
Apparently.
There's a few questions there, too.
Yeah.
Sending the criminals into space.
Oh, I don't know.
I guess. Unless they're already up there and they're bringing them
back
to Earth.
They might already be up there. Or it might just be...
Prison in space.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a much cheaper way.
Okay, that's what the director said. He was like, I would make a second one if it was in space.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a cheap prison system right there, shooting them up into space. And they all died. We couldn't do much. The hole broke and they all died.
That's true.
Yeah, wow. Con Air 2. We'll keep our eye out for that.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, have you seen Snakes on a Plane?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah, Snakes on a Plane was a weird concept, right? They put it out.
So was Con Air, though.
Yeah, but the Snakes on a Plane was like, they put the concept out, the internet went crazy for it. Like, wow, that's good. And then they made it.
And it was awful.
And then... in the first 30 seconds, people watching are like, oh, this isn't a movie. This is a meme. This is a 5-second joke. It's not a movie. What did we think was going to happen here?
I don't know.
Weird internet culture. Now, I wanted to move on to what you said earlier about going on dates because I'm very interested in your method of finding a suitable suitor, shall we say.
Yeah.
Can you take us through that process, your vetting process?
My vetting process.
Yeah.
When I went, so if I met someone and they said, let's go on a date, and I'd say, sure, let's go and see a horror movie.
Yeah.
And when I was in high school, the kind of... which doesn't sound very good because that kind of just sounds like I was going on one date every 4 years or something.
Well, no.
I don't know with what frequency these movies came out.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was other movies in between. But anyway, because obviously when you're a teenager, they can't do anything. Like, what else are you going to do when you go on a date? You can't go anywhere, really.
No.
We used to go hang out in Glebe Park a lot.
Classy, yeah.
But... yeah, we used to go to the movies, and I always used to want people to take me to see the Saw movies.
Well, the Saw movies is like 7 of them, aren't there?
Yeah, I know, but that's what I mean.
Probably gone on a date every 9 months, the way they came out.
Yeah, but that's like not a lot of dates.
So all the way I ever went
every 9 months. It's a long time.
I don't know. It's certainly more dates than
I
ever went on as a teenager.
I feel like they were like further spaced out than that. Yeah, so I always used to get people to take me to Saw movies or any kind of, like, very grotesque horror movie.
Yeah.
Because I think part of me was like, I like horror movies,
yeah,
but I can't, you know, can't see them by myself, and I won't watch them now because I get too scared. But also, I think it was kind of, yeah, like a vetting process to see if they were, you know, tough enough to sit through tough that enough for movie. You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you would sit there and just happily watch them, and then.
I think I was watching them watch the movie.
Oh right. Yeah. See, I was always the opposite on dates. I like the movie so much that when the movie's
you'd
on,
forget that. Yeah.
And I still do it now. Mm. I happily go to the movies by myself.
Mm. I like to do that as well.
I still do it now because it's just, yeah, if it's a good movie especially, then I just lock in. So I would not have been a good date. But how often were they scared, or how often were they not scared, or were they more scared than you?
Yeah, I think sometimes they were more scared than me.
Yeah, and you were like, nope, sorry, you have to be less scared than me. I don't understand. I don't know with you, if I had to guess, I don't know whether you would want them to be more scared or less scared than you.
What does that mean?
Well, I don't know how deep we want to get into this then. I guess I think maybe you would think I want them to be less scared than me, but a bigger part of you would be like, I hope
I'm a strong, independent woman. Yeah, I hope these men or boys
are going to pretend like they're not scared, but I hope they really are scared. Because then I get a sense of how, not only whether they're actually scared, but how they react to being scared in front of a girl.
Mm.
That's what I imagine went on in your brain.
I think 14-year-old Emily was probably wondering about, like, you know, the inherent problems with masculinity.
Yeah.
Probably, I don't know. Yeah. Heteronormativity, that was a big concern of mine when I was 14.
Can you say that phrase again?
Heteronormativity.
I don't know what that is. Oh. Can you explain it in a soundbite?
No.
Just normalizing or like falling into
a
category
of... Yeah, just kind of that expected societal behaviours.
Of a hetero male.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Oh, well explained. Yeah. You should be a teacher.
Oh,
so you said you didn't watch the movies much? You watched them watching the movies?
Well, I liked the movies, but I think when it got to like the really gory parts, I was kind of...
But then how that's not learning whether they're more scared than you if you're watching them because it's too gory for you to
watch.
That's
true. It's not a very fair vetting test. No one said it was going to be fair.
No, that's true.
But I did go... So in the summer between high school and college, I went out with a guy... And we saw some horror movie. It might have been a Saw movie. I can't remember. And that was my choice. And then we went on like a second date. And it was his choice. And he took me to see Happy Feet. The Penguin movie.
The Penguin movie. Wow.
And then I was like, absolutely not. This is just not.
So, but you chose the first date.
Yeah.
But he still, in his head, was like, she's a girl,
yeah.
I'll take her to a cute
movie. The singing penguin movie.
Yeah,
and
girls like
I,
singing penguin movies.
No, and then I did something really bad. And I just like, because we went to the movies, we went to Civic, to Dendy, or was it, was probably Dendy at that point, I don't know. Yeah, I think it was Dendy. And then we were meant to be like meeting up with other people afterwards, and I just...
You just ran away. That's not the wrong thing to do.
Just bailed.
But you still sat through Happy Feet.
No, but then on my first day of college, who turns up at my new school?
All of them.
Him. Happy Feet person.
Happy Feet.
Yeah.
Was his name Happy Feet?
No, his name was David.
I would just call him Happy Feet.
Happy Feet. Yeah.
So what I wonder is, what I think would happen was he was saying, all right, I'm going on my date now. Cool. Where are you taking it? I'm taking it to the movies. What are you going to see? We're going to see Hostel 2, where the people get their heads chainsawed off, and his parents, mum or his sister were like, don't take a girl to see that movie. You should take her to see Happy Feet.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, okay.
Before I went on my gap year, my boyfriend showed me Hostel, which because it's set in Europe, and also Taken.
Oh, wow, yeah. Yeah, that would have helped.
Say, look at all the things that could possibly go wrong.
When you go over to Europe.
Basically, like, please don't leave me because you may be kidnapped by Albanian terrorists.
Justine's the same. Like, really, if we go, and hopefully we do go to Europe again, She'll probably organise a tour of, like, this is the scene from Irreversible where this horrible thing happened.
Yeah.
Here's the scene from this movie. Here's where they shot the White Ribbon, where all the children killed all the adults.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, all these good stuff like that. Yeah, so...
I haven't seen any of those. I'm very uncultured.
Oh, yeah. That's, you know, in some ways you're very lucky.
Mm.
So, yes, wow, that is a good vetting process.
Yeah, but... it probably wasn't very successful. I don't know.
Well, obviously not.
No.
Not successful for them. Part of me thinks you're already stacking the deck.
Probably.
In the process.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
But now I couldn't watch them.
So why do you think that's changed?
I don't know. I think I kind of live by myself now as well.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing.
Yeah.
Always still have to check for serial killers just
in the corners vicinity?
Of places, dark spaces. Of, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it was just that. I think living by myself probably has something to do with it.
Yeah.
But also, I just am not. I don't know, maybe I had all this bravado when I was young, and I don't think I overthought things as much as I do now, because if I watch something now, it'll stay with me.
Yeah. Yeah, and that happens, that's for sure.
Like, have you seen the movie When a Stranger Calls?
No.
It's bad.
Yeah.
But when, you know, that line, it's like, the call is coming from inside the house.
Yeah.
That, like, still freaks me out. Just that line. Just the thought of,
I don't know if I've told this story on this podcast or anyone ever, but I did a horror unit in a year 9 English class.
Mm.
And I was teaching horror. And then for some reason, I thought, I'm going to show them the start of Scream, okay, mm-hmm. without the people getting slaughtered. It's a really
good choice.
It's a really effective scene of how horror is done, how you do suspense.
Yeah.
Because it's the same thing, like people walking backwards into rooms and jump scares and all this stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so we watched it in mm-hmm. class, and it's still really effective, and the kids were all, like, still freaked out. And then I stopped it before Drew Barrymore's body gets... stabbed to death and hung from a tree.
It's a good professional choice.
Yeah.
Exercising your professional judgment there.
So that's professional.
Very good. Yeah.
However, when I stopped the film, one of the boys had turned white. Like, it terrified him to the point where he was white and not in a good way. And I was like, that's terrible teaching right there. Someone said, look at him. And I was looking at him. And I didn't make fun. That's how bad, how scared he was.
Right.
And he was like, everyone was like, whoa, he's...
Is he okay?
I've never seen anyone get literally freaked out before.
Yeah.
He was, just white. And I don't know, maybe he still thinks about that from time to time. Like, so that was like, I'm going to have to put the pieces back together.
Yeah,
to call home and say,
just can't, like... I used to like them so much. Like, a bunch of our friends, like 3 years ago, when the second, I can't even remember what it's called, where that the Australian one where he hunts the...
Oh, Wolf Creek.
That one, but the second one.
Oh, really? Yeah. I think
and
I watched
fell
that.
Off my seat. I was so scared. Jumped and fell onto the ground.
I thought that was, like, really terrible.
But it had moments of jumpiness,
moments. Yeah.
And so I jumped and just left my seat. It was very embarrassing.
I don't know the last time I've seen a horror movie at a cinema.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. No. I also saw the Blair Witch Project.
Oh, okay.
That was like a...
Is that a rite of passage movie?
I think, that's like a sleepover favourite.
But that, again... Always. Again, that was a movie. It came out. This is, you know, I'm older than you, so
yes,
it came out, and it was
it
was a phenomenon, and everyone was watching it, and I was like, whatever. And then someone said, I've got it on video, and so I watched that by myself, and it was kind of like, this movie is so dull.
Mm.
During the daytime scenes, I was like, this is badly written.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he throws away the map. Why did he throw away it? Yeah. Whoa,
there's a lot of questions.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of just bad writing and stuff like that. But it is genuinely terrifying.
Mm.
And the ending is probably one of the best endings to a horror movie I've ever seen, you know, where she runs in and then the camera hits the...
Mm.
He falls and you see him hit and the dude standing in the corner with his head. Yeah, that bit.
Mm.
Again, I watched that by myself. And I was like, that movie wasn't scary. Turn it off and go, oh, shit. Oh, no, I'm all alone in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, yeah, I think that's still a movie that, like, kids will go, oh, God, let's watch the Blair Witch Project and see how scary it is. And they do still find it scary, but it just made so many imitations from that, as often happens.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're going to move on from scary horror movies. Right. We probably won't get through all of these. And let's talk about Clueless.
Yes, let's.
Now, I could quote
this. Possibly the greatest movie of all time.
I don't really want to quote things from it, so I won't.
Oh,
so,
I do it all the time.
Cool. Tell me more, because you know what? I can't. Don't know if I've ever sat through this.
Really?
I know I've seen it all.
Just not in one
go. It's like The Sound of Music. I've never watched The Sound of Music.
It's so good.
I'm not the target audience.
Well, that's true.
I don't think. So it's just that kind of thing. There's a disconnect there that I can't get. Maybe I needed to watch it when I was younger.
But you're like a sensitive new age guy.
Yeah, I was. I was that in the 90s. I thought maybe that'll work.
And then what happened?
Well, it wasn't me.
Right.
That's the problem. People see through that shit very quickly. And also a lot of times people will go, hey, or girls especially that I like, would just tell me about how all the other guys they dated were dicks. And I just had to sit there and listen to them talk about it.
Yeah.
I'm not a dick. Yeah, that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of that in my, especially at high school.
Mm.
So I sort of played that angle, but that's all it is. You're playing an angle. Nobody likes that.
No.
No, you have to just do what...
Yeah, it's true. You're probably not the target audience of that film.
No. I didn't even know Paul Rudd was in it until, like, we watched it recently, and I'm like, oh, yeah, he is in it.
That guy.
But again, like, I can't watch it as an adult because everyone in the movie looks like they're about 35, like playing teenagers. Yeah. That always annoys me with that. But anyway.
Yes.
Tell me all about Clueless.
What do you want me to talk about?
Like, why is it so great? Convince me that it's so great.
It's so funny. But it's very, you know, it's very witty, okay. I think. The dialogue's really clever.
Yeah.
And the outfits.
Fetch.
Yes. Fetch. No, that's Mean Girls.
That's Mean Girls?
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't quote it. Uh-huh.
And it's just this whole, but, you know, there's so much in that movie that I watched when I was younger and that I didn't get. At all, like so much I didn't understand. And then rewatching it, you know, when she's talking about like, no shit, you guys got coke here?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it's America. Like, and I didn't understand what that meant. But yeah, cool. Not allowed to drink that either. Like,
hey guys, I bought the coke.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't understand. And when they're talking about how Christian, he's gay.
Yeah.
And they're like, I didn't pick up on that. I was like, why doesn't he like her? And then he's like, he's a, what does he call him? Like a cake boy or something? Boy, yeah. I didn't know what that meant. And it's, yeah, a lot of kind of nuanced stuff that I just completely went over my head.
Now, again, this is going to show I haven't seen. Is this the guy that thinks he's like Frank Sinatra style?
Yeah.
What is up with that?
I don't know.
He's
but,
just a tool.
Yeah, but then she's like, but she loves him because all the other boys in her high school are, you know, all skaters and
jocks and
stupid teenagers.
Yeah.
And
he's ascetic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then were you, when you were at school, at high school, were you like, cool, I'm going to meet that guy.
He's gay.
Yeah, I know that. But until you realise that, what I mean is, like, before you...
No, I probably would have just liked the brother, which is weird because, you know, she ends up with, like, her ex-stepbrother or something.
Yeah.
But he's cool and he's a lawyer and stuff. He's a sensible guy.
And he's nice.
He's nice. He cares about the environment and stuff.
And that was important.
Yeah.
That's very important, yeah. So why do you think it endures? People still like watching Clueless. now.
Yeah, I think it's probably the part of me thinks it's like the Jane Austen.
Yeah.
You know, the links to that.
Because it's Emma.
Yeah. They study it a lot.
Yeah, they do study at a lot uni. At uni. At school they do it as well. You know, it's
intertextuality and all that sort of stuff.
A lot of times at high school they show it and then they go, this is Emma. And then they tell the story of Emma in one page. And then one goes, oh, yeah, that's taken from that.
I just think that it's funny, but there's just so much in it in terms of the materialistic stuff.
Yeah.
That you just get really sucked in. It's probably just really elaborate product placement. But, you know, in the beginning where she picks her outfit out on the computer.
Yeah.
And then her wardrobe spins. Like, what kind of girl does not want that?
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. Then she has a Jeep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Again, these are the things that by the time I watched it, they really annoyed me. I'm like, who are all these teenagers with all this money? I don't want to see rich teenagers. All these movies are just tropes of like rich teenagers driving to school in new cars all the time. You're like, oh.
Yeah. That's true.
But it does have, like you said, the dialogue's pretty snappy and it has an energy to it, which you don't usually find in these type in.
I just think it's really clever though. A lot of the dialogue probably I didn't understand and I just watched it initially for the cool clothes and the kind of.
And the story behind it.
Yeah, but then now I really like it because it's, especially like Dion and her boyfriend.
Yeah.
That guy from Scrubs.
The guy from Scrubs, yeah.
And I think that they have a really interesting relationship, so.
So you enjoy it more now, like the more you watch it?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I should give it a watch, really.
I have it on DVD. I'll lend it to you.
Like, I don't say it much at school because girls will throw things at me, but I've never watched Clueless all the way through, and I've never watched Mean Girls all the way through.
Mean Girls is
And I really should, and I really should because they're, you know.
See, I really like Mean Girls, and I've seen it several times, but it's not one of the ones that I'll...
No.
Like, I've watched it enough now. I've done that.
I mean, it's a Tina Fey movie, and I really should watch it if it's Tina Fey.
It doesn't have enough Tina Fey in it, though, really.
No, but she wrote it.
Yeah, but she's not very funny in it.
No.
And she's, you know, Lindsay Lohan's a bit useless.
How can you say that?
Well, I think it all went downhill from there, to be honest.
Did the Herbie movie as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened.
No. She might come back. You never know.
Yeah.
She might have talent. But the thing about Lindsay Lohan, when you look at Mean Girls, is she's the every girl figure, right? In Mean Girls.
Yes.
So why did she place herself? Why was she placed as the extraordinary girl? Like... you know, marketing, like outside of the movie, like Lindsay Lohan, like her quest to be really famous was like separate from this image from Mean Girls of being just the every girl figure. You know what I mean?
Does that make sense? I don't know what you mean.
So it's not like she played like
Do you mean like when they were marketing the movie?
No, I mean like her and marketing her brand for what you want to call it was as like a clamber for fame, right?
Mm.
But the clamour for fame was, look how extraordinary Lindsay Lohan is.
Yeah.
And yet her greatest strength seemed to be playing just a normal person.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So if they had just marketed her as this normal person, maybe she was like, I'm not normal, I'm special.
Yeah, probably.
But that's what I never got, was like, why are we seeing her in these ads, or why is she trying to be outrageous? Yeah. And, you know, maybe she's like, I'm not boring.
No.
Nobody wants to be boring.
No. And I think unless you are in a Tina Fey movie.
Yeah.
It's like the every girl. It's not that interesting.
No, that's true. No,
Tina Fey writes that really well.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's a very good point.
So, you know, maybe there's not a lot of other job opportunities for that.
Hmm.
Or something.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Mm.
But you're right. Tina Fey does write the every girl,
the
boring girl really well.
Yeah.
Make them really interesting. Now, we're going to crack on.
Okay.
Let's talk about Hidden Figures.
Yes.
And you saw that's fairly recent, this year?
Yes,
it was. You went to the movies this year?
I did go to the movies this year. And it was a good crowd of people who did not speak during the film.
That's all right. Again, this is the type of movie you need to go and see.
Yeah,
It's not esoteric and
no.
And foreign. But
it was set you know.
Yeah, you're going to get people
in the
who,
past.
Yeah. So, what is this movie yeah. about?
Why are they wearing these clothes?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just really liked it. And it was very, I thought it was very empowering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Not as I am, you know, I am an exceptionally white woman.
Yes.
But, you know, it's about these, like, African-American women who get hired by NASA as computers. And they're so good at maths because they didn't have actual computer processing technology at that point. So they hired humans to do this.
To do the computer work.
The calculations. And it's just, but it was that this whole thing of, you know, they were in the space race with Russia. And it was this really tense time of, you know, that nuclear war was going to happen and Russia was going to sort of bomb everybody. And, but also America was having this kind of, they're segregated, and in the film they've got, you know, blacks only water fountain and whites only, you know, bathrooms, or colored, whatever horrible like expression going to use, like, you know, like, this is the colored bathroom and this is the white bathroom, and so, you know, they're kind of trying to get America to this you know, to beat Russia, but at the same time they're like, well, you have to sit at the back of the bus.
But that's so
there was some really interesting stuff in there, like, historically, but I just thought it was really empowering because those women were hardcore.
But that's the thing about, certainly about segregation, is there's all these stories that you hear. And I was reading about the athlete in the Berlin Olympics, Jesse Owens in the Berlin Olympics. And it was, or everyone thinks that Hitler snubbed Jesse Owens because he was a black man and a white race. But that's not really what happened. Hitler didn't salute anyone that wasn't German or stand up for anyone who wasn't German, but who he got snubbed by was the American president, and then he wasn't even invited to the White House along with everyone else. And when he got back to America, he sat at the back of the bus and did everything else. Sammy Davis Jr. is another example where he played all these clubs in Las Vegas, but he couldn't enter through the hotel lobby. He had to go around the servants.
Same as Ella Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
Yeah. She has a song about that or something.
Yeah, playing in the circus. Hadn't go through the servants' entrance or the cook, the chef entrance, even though people are paying all this money to see you perform.
Yeah, yeah.
And nope, sorry. You can't sit there. You can't stand there. It's, outrageous.
But then, I just thought, because I didn't know. Like, then I obviously realized that it was based on a true story.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was really cool that, because I obviously, you know, that doesn't get talked about much.
No, so it's about...
Especially because they're women as well.
I was going to say, so it's the race element. Yeah, but it's also the fact that they're women.
Yeah, really, like, really, really intelligent and really kind of...
Yeah.
Just to put up with that sort of prejudice every day.
Yeah. And it's so dismissive as well. Like, once this is done, back you go.
Yeah.
In every sense of the word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And having to art, like, one of the, I think the, I cried a lot in that movie, but the scene, I think, one of the scenes that really upset me was that, one of the women wants to apply for this role. At the plant, what do you call NASA?
I don't know.
Space
Authority.
Facility.
Yes, that's right.
At the space place.
Yep.
But they said, you know, you can't actually work on this program unless you have this degree in, like, you know, quantifiable something. And they said, okay, you have to do college courses to, you know, kind of upskill yourself to be a candidate for this role. But then she can't go to university because black people are not allowed to go to university. And so she has to go to court and apply for a special pardon from a judge to let her go to university.
Yeah.
And then she walks into this lecture theater and she's the only woman, and she's definitely the only non-Caucasian person in the room, and everyone just stares at her, and it just made me really upset.
Yeah, it's hard.
Like, and it shouldn't be that difficult.
It's hard to, again, like, one of the things you have to deal with teaching teenagers is them bemoaning the fact that the world's like terrible and it's the world's going to end and all this stuff like that. And
yeah.
How, you know, in the past it was better, and you're like, what are you talking about?
In the past
about?
It was
yeah, like, oh, you go, well, no, in the 50s there was a constant threat of nuclear destruction, and in the 60s there was a constant threat of nuclear destruction, and in the 70s and the 80s as well. It was really only the 90s where we sort of had this 10-year period of...
But then they thought that the Y2K bug was going to happen.
Yeah, and... no one really believed that,
really?
I don't think. No.
Oh.
That's... I mean, the media sort of, like, turned that up.
Oh,
but
okay.
On a basic... I'm sure there were people that were freaking
maybe
out.
Maybe not
but,
so much here than overseas.
Yeah, and maybe people... I was, like, you know, 20 at the time, so we were all kind of like, what is this rubbish? But maybe other older people may have been like, oh, my God, all the computers will explode because they can't work out what the date is. But, yeah, the 90s were fairly plain in that regard. But you could say, hey, in the past...
There was quite a lot of
conflict
happening elsewhere.
Yeah, but you have to deal with the sexism and the racism that wouldn't be acceptable now. But it's PC gone mad now, though, all these requests people make for not offending people.
Yeah.
We should be allowed to offend people.
I'm not agreeing with you on that one.
And maybe by law, hasn't been passed yet, maybe we will be able to offend people more.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great? I just think, you know, sometimes I feel like, you know, you ever read comments on people that people put on Facebook?
Try not to.
Yeah, you should. It's, oh, yeah. And then I seriously worry about the future of our country.
Yeah. But that's what Facebook does, is give everyone a voice. Oh, they've always been there.
But...
Those voices have always been there. It's just those people who want to make those weird, completely horrible comments, they don't have much else to do apart from make those mean, horrible comments
on Facebook. I just don't understand it, though. Like, what is the point?
What's the point of making horrible, sexist, racist comments? I don't know. I think it's I don't know, maybe it's a power thing, maybe it's just I feel shitty, I'm gonna make other people feel shitty. Maybe it's like I feel great, I like making other people feel shitty.
Like
it could be that
I saw this really nice story on the ABC Facebook page.
Yeah.
That was
I know what you're going to say. Why do people go out? Is that going out of their way?
Yes.
Finding stories that they don't agree with. They don't agree with any part of it, but
the
they read it just
who
to.
Threw a meringue pie in the
face
of Alan
that.
Joyce.
Yeah.
Because his company is, or Qantas, is not against same sex marriage.
Not against.
So therefore. A pie to the face.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I didn't realize that I was going to get in trouble for doing that.
No.
He went, like, the amount of effort. He bought the pie.
He had to
buy
the pie.
He said, I chose the pie, the lemon meringue, because I thought it would do the least amount of damage.
Yeah, yeah. So what was his point?
I don't know.
Like,
and
he
then
had
he
to...
wrapped it up like a birthday present to get it into the building.
Yeah, and then hit him with the pie and then went, oh.
So much effort.
Yeah, I didn't know I was going to get in trouble or get this much attention.
Yeah.
I just thought, so what did he think?
I don't know.
He didn't realize all this stuff, but what did
he
think?
I don't. I think his argument wasn't about same-sex marriage. I think it was about big business forcing us to, you know, comply with their political ideologies or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting watching
and
that side of the argument.
And apply to the face is definitely not forcing someone to comply with your political ideology.
It's very interesting. I like hearing conservative politicians in particular come out and bemoan the fact that, like, these big businesses are being held accountable or being, like, forced to accept or forced to take on these progressive ideals by all these horrible people. They should be free to be impartial and carry on their business like with no input from anyone else outside
of
them.
Not.
You're like, oh my Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it's nice every now and then when businesses do that though.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to listen to you. But again, well, I think we might wrap it up there.
Okay.
And thank you very much. That was a very quick 53 minutes.
Yeah, that was. I didn't even remember what we talked about.
No, me neither.
Oh,
I'm drunk. All right. See ya.
Bye.
That's it.